Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. And we travel the world for past, present, and future stars. And coming to you live from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, our radio aficionado in snowy wonderland all across the United States, Bob Murray. How you doing?
Okay, Aaron, it is cold on top of it all.
Hey, it is winter, isn't it?
Yes, it is winter, and you know, January is rolling through. We got some good boxing news to talk about today too. So, we'll try to warm everybody up with some good fighting news.
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on in the boxing world, from the heavyweight division with next week. Bryant fighting in Warren, Ohio. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And also, Russell Jr. is fighting in Atlantic City today. You're going to be announcing that, too, when you go around the world. And, you know, seems like Tyson Fury and the purse bids and all of that. And we're going to talk about that heavyweight division, because some of them are having bad luck.
Yes. Those guys just can't find anybody to go in the ring with them.
Yeah, ain't that a shame?
Yeah.
That's a shame. But, Bob, what do we got? Come on and take – oh, we'll be talking about Muhammad Ali. You know, his birthday was the other day, and we'll go down that line, too.
Yeah. Right, you know, also, I just want to just pass along some sad news. A fighter named Aris Sakhalyan. He had passed away last week. We didn't get to talk about it last week, but he was fighting on Boxing Day in Russia. That was the 26th of December, fighting at Igor Semarin, and it was a super middleweight fight, and he passed away from a head injury that he suffered. So we just went to, as we do at the top of the show, we start with some sad news, but for the family of that young fighter, you know, he died a warrior.
Yeah, yes, he did. God bless him and his family, and protect them through the struggle and the hardship of such a loss. Our condolences from the World Boxing Review Radio Show.
Exactly. Okay, so anyway, let's head out and start at the Borgata Hotel Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey, USA, on Showtime, where we were talking about just a couple minutes ago, where the longest reigning champion in boxing, Gary Russell Jr., 31-1, 18 KOs, defends his WBC World Featherweight title for the sixth time, this one against unbeaten challenger Mark Magsayo, who's 23-0 with 16 knockouts. In the co-main event, we'll pit the 17-1, all 17 wins by knockout, Subriel Matias, versus the 16-2-2 with 7 KOs, Petros Ananian, in a big rematch. Ananian won by unanimous decision in their first fight. Also, it's Tuksat Mayombiar, who's 12-2, 9 KOs, versus Zakaria Lucas, 25-1, 17 knockouts in a featherweight showdown. Out in Dearborn, Michigan, they highlight the Hugo Centeno Jr., 28-3-1 with 15 knockouts, versus Antonio Todd, 25-1 with 7 KOs. That's a middleweight matchup. And in Fort Worth, Texas, it's Juan Antonio Lopez, 16-9, stepping in against Josh Ross, who's 5-15-5 in a lightweight headliner there. And down at the Punch Bowl Arena in Tijuana, Mexico, the super middleweight contest between Romario Avar and Jossi Chavez Gonzalez tops the bill. Undefeated light flyweight Gerardo Zapata, 13-0, takes on the 15-15-3 Byron Castellon in the topper from Managua, Nicaragua. Tierra Amarilla in Chile. The curtain closes after the Eduardo Zuleta versus Jose Ignacio Balsito welterweight clash. Tyc Sports TV will be in Merlo, Buenos Aires, Argentina, where 11-0 female flyweight Gabriela Celeste Alaniz faces off with the 16-1 Johanna Zuniga. And on now to Eggenstein, Leopoldshof in Baden-Württemberg, Germany, for a big card top with the Andrei Vilaskovsky, 19-2-2, 12 knockouts, versus Rafael Bajoran, 29-5-1, 12 knockouts. That's about for the IBL Intercontinental Middleweight Belt, along with Karen Tsukakazayan, 19-1, crossing the ropes with 14-2-1, Ryan Martin, and they fight for the IBF Intercontinental Welterweight strap. Other 10-rounders include the heavyweight contest between Alexander the cars I eat. He's 15-0, 11 knockouts, and Pavel Sauer, 14-6. And Sauer, he fought 2 weeks ago. He had a one-round knockout win, so he's ready to fight in 2 weeks' notice. And Simon Zakenhuber, 14-0, duking it out with Maurice Mariel, 8-1, for the IBF Youth Middleweight Crown. Debuting super featherweights Ivan Gubaglo and Victor Lucas meet up in Malti in Moldova. And down in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, lightweight Emmanuel Mwakyembe and Mustafa Dato do battle. And Cebu in the Philippines will host a super featherweight confrontation between Christian Pitt Lorente, 8-0, and Vicente Casido, who's 6-3-1. And there we go. We have nine countries. Still have some lockdowns going on in Europe, and we'll talk about that in a couple minutes, what's happening with the French heavyweight fighter. But nine countries staying steady where we were last week.
Wow, that's good. There's activity happening all over the world, man.
Yeah, we see that, boxing, man. And even though, we have some places who are still limiting crowds and all that, we're still, going around finding places that are still having some action tonight. And, South America, Africa, out in the Far East, and right here in the USA.
Okay. Well, we're going to bring it right back to the United States, man. With just a few days ago, Muhammad Ali, his birthday, man, if he was here living, he would be 80 years old, which would have been a great milestone for anybody if they were living. But for him, the memories of Muhammad Ali touched so many people's lives because he touched so many people's lives. And, when you think of Muhammad Ali, you can think about the sport of boxing, all the great things that he accomplished, being the youngest heavyweight champion then, and then after Mike Tyson became soon after that, years down the road, the youngest heavyweight champion. But when Muhammad Ali fought Sonny Liston, no one thought that Muhammad Ali would come out the victor because Sonny Liston at the time was like Mike Tyson. He was strong, brutal, and it could punch like a mule. And people thought a young brass gold medalist coming, out of the Olympics, young, big mouth and all that, there was no way in the world that he was going to beat Sonny Liston. And soon had it is that Muhammad Ali rose to the occasion to beat Sonny Liston, not once, but twice. In anybody's book, the type of fighter that Sonny Liston was, it was just for a young fighter to rise to that kind of occasion, talk the rounds, talk the fight, say how he was going to do it, calling him out, tell him he was going to whoop him, and rise to that occasion with the lip service that he had was just an amazing defeat in all of sports. And then later on down the road, Bob, for him to come back after losing to Joe Frazier when he got knocked down, and then the comeback in the Thriller in Manila. What a fight, man, in the Thriller in Manila to win when both fighters, Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali, gave it all they had. And Eddie Futch said that was enough, is that it was just too grueling. Both of them were heavy fatigued. Muhammad Ali ends up winning. And Ali said, was on the stool, and he looked over and said, they stopped the fight. They stopped the fight. He said that he was just getting ready to quit before Joe Frazier's corner stopped the fight. Man, what an amazing story, amazing defeat. And then to come down with George Foreman, with another one. George Foreman was knocking everybody out, he, including Joe Frazier, hit him so far bad. George Foreman lifted Joe Frazier off the canvas, and Joe Frazier bounced three or four times before going down on the canvas to get knocked out. I mean, George Foreman was just an amazing fighter, just like Joe Frazier, but amazing puncher. And Muhammad Ali was able to handle George Foreman punching power and end up knocking George Foreman out. You know, just some of the memorable folks. And then later on, he went on to fight a young brass Olympian named Leon Spinks with seven fights. And Ali took an undercut, he said, underestimated Leon Spinks. And Leon Spinks ended up beating Muhammad Ali on a decision. And then in the rematch, Muhammad Ali was saying that he just took – there was no way that Leon Spinks was going to stand up to the stuff that he could do. He did. And Ali said in the rematch, he said, "I can't let him out-hustle me." And Ali said, "I'm going to out-hustle him." So that's what he did. He would put combination punches together, and then when Leon Spinks get inside, what he didn't do before, Muhammad Ali would tie him up and take him for a walk. But, you know, there's just some of the moments in boxing history when it comes to Muhammad Ali. You know, his whole boxing career has been a diamond in a jewel, you know, as we say. But, Bob, what's your opinion on it?
And, you know, I just want to go back to the Liston fight, too. You know, that one fight, that was Sonny Liston kept calling him Clay. You know, and he wasn't taking on the new name, Muhammad Ali. So that was actually kind of motivation for Muhammad Ali. You know, when he was beating him, he said, you know, the old say my name thing.
Yeah, Patterson and all them guys, he did it, too. And he did it to what's my name to Floyd Patterson and all that, you know.
Right.
Yeah. It was something. Ali was a character, and his memories will live on when it comes to boxing. But living in a cultural society, you know, the things that he did politically wise, standing up for civil rights, standing up for the downtrodden and the poor and the ones kicked to the side. And his great charity work is, you know, just amazing for a man of his stature in bronze, is to take on those civil rights things. You know, back day, or they want to call it the hippie days, Bob, of the Vietnam War. You know, we ain't fighting no more in the Vietnam War and all of that.
Right.
And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And where he stood up as a conscientious objector and refused to go into the draft and things. But people said, oh, man, he didn't stand up for America. But during that time, the cultural warfare, people in different communities felt that the Vietnam was war. It was unjust. And Muhammad Ali took the plight of the masses of the people. We ain't going to war, and we ain't fight no more. And he had a religious right and refused to do it. Now, when he did that, when he stood up, as you well know, they stripped him of his title. They took away his youthful years,
right,
of him being a champion, him being a boxer, the United States government did. And it broke him down, but he kept fighting, man, and fighting. And they stripped him of his title. They took his license away for him to box until the time after he went to court and won in court, you know, that he got favored by the court. And then after that, he was coming out of that exile from what the United States government put on him. And then his first fight out, and that's when he came up to Deer Lake, Bob.
Okay, right.
With the Jerry Qualley fight, you know. And then from then on, The Great Deer Lake down the road was put on the map, baby.
Oh, yeah.
They bring them back. And, you know, Bob, a lot of people in Schuylkill County, in that community, Muhammad Ali was going through the different struggles, you know, not having enough money in that camp. You know, they helped him out. Ernie Pollock and a couple guys from there, they really helped Muhammad Ali out.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They built the camp on a promissory note. And that promissory note that they did, and after the fight, Muhammad Ali paid them.
Right.
But those guys helped them out in the struggle. You know what I mean? And that's just an amazing defeat in anything for a community to come together like that. And can see further down the road and who he was and what he stands for, to open their arms out and welcome them, community, and then for all of that to happen. But, hey, time went on. Muhammad Ali sold it to different people, but the people who have it now, Mike Madden and Mick down there, who's the groundskeeper, you know, they have a restored it into its original form. They're doing different types of programs down there, and we did some with them.
Yes.
To keep the memories and all of that of Muhammad Ali, to keep it all alive in Schuylkill County. And while we're talking about Mike Madden, is that his father passed.
Yes.
And we want to extend our condolences. They just had services just a few days ago. And, Madden was really something with the Madden games and the football and the buses and stuff like that. So we want to extend our condolences out to the Madden family for the things that they're doing in boxing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, just going back to that whole Deer Lake thing, too, and I believe that was the same time where, you know, the original camp, as you know, was right, like, kind of right on Deer Lake, and then it moved over to Sculpt Hill. That was about the same time, right?
Yeah. Well, Bernie Pollock's mink farm was down there by the lake, you know, back on that road back there.
Right.
That's where Pollock's mink farm was. And Bernie had a store in downtown Pottsville right there in the corner, if you can remember, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Pollock's
and,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and one in Reading. And at first, they had started the camp down by the mink farm that brought trailers and stuff down there. So that's how that went. And then they found land that they had up there on Skull Hill, up on the mountain.
Right, that's where it is now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Muhammad, you know, Muhammad went to the mountaintop and he seen the light of his Lord. And boy, man, you know, I can say this. Muhammad Ali was the type of person, he didn't step on people, man. He'd bring people up to his level where he was at. You know, and, you know, all the great things that I have accomplished, I have to owe it in part to Muhammad Ali, man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was the greatest. He showed us the way. He preached and teached and instilled in us that we could also do it if we worked hard and things like that. Different doors would open, have the belief in God that all things were possible, you know, and for myself to rise to those occasions, all the heavyweight champions I trained, and then all the fighters that I trained from bantamweight to heavyweight and all of those in between. It's just a real, real blessing, you know, that God put me in the right spot at the right time to have a magnificent journey in the sport of boxing, all due to Muhammad Ali.
Right, and that is absolutely true. And you're right, Aaron, and you know, you just look at, you know, there you are, a young man, little, you know, teenager, and you're going down there, and next thing you know, it's life-changing for you, and look where you got. Yeah, so no doubt about it. He was definitely a number one influence in your life, I could tell.
Yeah, no question. And you know, every fighter that was around there that was come up young, everybody turned into something. Tony Tubbs, he was there, up there.
Okay. Yeah.
He turned out heavyweight champion. You know, he was an outstanding amateur fighter, and he was part of MAPS, which was Muhammad Ali Amateur and Professional Sports. And Ali had went and pursued the best amateur fighters in the country to be on his boxing team. And so you had Tony Tucker, who was light heavyweight when he was amateur and then turned heavyweight. He won the IBF heavyweight championship and then went on to fight Mike Tyson. He lost when he fought Mike Tyson, but he rose to the level. And the first champion of all of the mat sports was Leo Randolph. You know, he ended up winning the first world title from all of those guys.
Okay.
And then you had a young Tim Witherspoon. Tim, when he came up there to spar Saad Muhammad, Tim only had three amateur fights. He did what he was sparring Muhammad Ali. He was still an amateur, Tim was.
Okay. Yeah.
And he went on to become two-time heavyweight champion of the world. We all did that together. And from time to time, Muhammad Ali would come train with us, like when we were over in England, when he took us to bring us down to the Cayman Islands and stuff like that. Ali would come and, you know, give his support. And in Atlanta, Georgia, when two people that he mentored fought each other, and that was Tony Tucker, and Tony Tucker was the WBA champion, and him and Tim fought in Atlanta, and Tim Witherspoon ended up beating Tony Tucker for the WBA title to become a two-time heavyweight champion of the world, man, and all of that, you know, and to have Muhammad Ali come down there to Atlanta at the time. Atlanta was the first place to give Muhammad Ali his license back, Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay,
so
yeah.
that was monumental, with Martin Luther King's birthday, too, just days before Muhammad Ali's, too. And we want to give the Martin Luther King's family a shout-out, too, is that Don King did a fight in Atlanta with him and Martin Luther King's picture on the poster with Tim Witherspoon and Tucker during that time. And that fight was to support Coretta Scott King, who they were trying to get a national holiday for Martin Luther King. And that's what the fight was all about. And all of us were down in Atlanta, Coretta Scott King. They had a parade and all that, the fight and all that. So it was something monumental in boxing, and they worked hard and got the holiday, a national holiday of Martin Luther King. So, man, it's just a beautiful time to sit back when these days and things come up and reflect all the great moments of trials and tribulations and the struggle for freedom, justice, and equality that people pay a part in it. A wise man told me, he said, when you look at the sandy beach, it looks full with nothing but sand. He said, but you go down, you put your hand in it, it's each little grain of sand that makes a sandy beach look the way it is. And he said, when you're fighting for freedom, justice, and equality for people, it's like that. Many people. But each little grain of sand plays its part in the larger picture for standing up for that freedom, justice, and equality. And I was glad I was just a part of some great people and the great things that they do.
Oh, yeah. No, that's quite amazing. And, you know, one of the people you worked with, of course, Hall of Fame promoter Don King, he's got some boxing coming up next Saturday night. We talked about that last week, but just to let everybody know, yeah, that's next week, Warren, Ohio, the Packard Music Hall. and it'll be 6 championship bouts. Now, you said he already put together one with 8 bouts. We got 6 bouts.
Yeah, he holds the record for the most world title fights on one night. That's 8. And then me and Henry Hascop was talking, and Henry said, yeah, in Ohio, Don King now, once this fight goes off, will have the record for 6 title bouts in one night. And at 90 years old, that is defeat second to none when it comes to boxing and promoting and things. And it shows at his age, at 90, he still got it. And number two, it means he's still engaged and still barking at the bit to try to give people opportunity, these young fighters, that give them the opportunity to fight for millions and millions of dollars. And that's something very, very special.
Oh, yeah. And let's just look back on that, on this fight that's coming up. It's going to be two big co-main events, and that hotline with Ilunga Makabu. He defends his WBC World Cruiserweight title against Abiso Makunu. And that one's Makabu, he's 28-2, 25 KOs. He's out of South Africa, and also fellow countryman, the WBC silver champion, Makunu. He's 25-3 with 13 KOs, whereas Makabu's 28-2, 25 knockouts. And, of course, we talked about this a couple months back when this was just happening, that the winner of this fight is hopefully going to have the opportunity to fight Canelo Alvarez later this year when Alvarez moves up, which he's saying, again, he wants to be a cruiserweight again. So, you know, it's a big fight, and that's one of many. Also, we got the WBA World Heavyweight Champion, Trevor Bryan, undefeated, 21-0, 15 KOs out of Fort Lauderdale, and he'll be fighting against another undefeated fighter, Jonathan Guidry out of Louisiana, who's 17-0-2 with 10 KOs. And so we get to see Trevor Bryan back in action, get his name back into that heavyweight championship discussion too.
Yeah, absolutely, Bob. You know, you're talking about Canelo Alvarez. You know, his trainer had went to the WBC convention, which was months ago, and he asked him to put it on the floor in order to fight him. And so they voted, and they said, yeah, absolutely, Canelo Alvarez can fight him. But, you know, in the position Canelo Alvarez is, he's a cash cow, and everybody wants to fight him in order to get some cash in their pocket, you know. But still in all, you know, I think with this year, with Don King, it would be a great, great promotion for something like that to happen, win, lose, or draw for the South African. It would be a monumental thing for him to have that kind of opportunity as champion to fight somebody like Canelo Alvarez. If he wins, it will be a monumental defeat. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It would
be
a monumental defeat in boxing. If he wins, it would be something special, you know?
Right. And let's just cover the rest of those championship fights. You have the NABA Gold Heavyweight Championship fight. That's going to have Alonzo Butler, 34-3-2, 25 of those wins by KO. And he'll be taking on Ahmed Hefni, who's 13-1, 5 KOs. Also, we have the NABA Cruiserweight title clash between Johnny Langston, he's 9-3 out of Sarasota, and Nick Kisner, 22-5-1 out of Baltimore. Nick Kisner, I got to see fight Otto Wallen that time on the Clarissa Shields versus Christina Hammer undercard there in Atlantic City. And Kisner and Wallen, they really didn't have much of a fight. It was stopped after one round when Kisner suffered an accidental headbutt and got a severe eye cut. But I'll look forward to seeing Nick Kisner back in action again, dropping down to a cruiserweight, too, from heavyweight. Also, the NABA Middleweight Championship will have Michael Moore. He's out of Cleveland, 18-3, 18 KOs, and fighting Anthony Lenk, 17-7 out of Niagara Falls. And then they also have Cody Wilson. He's 10-3, 7 KOs, and he'll be fighting Trayshawn Wiggins out of New York, Newburgh, New York, and that'll be for the NABA Welterweight Championship. And then there's also another fight they have listed, too, with a cruiserweight, no title fight, but it's Jaywan Woods, 11-1-1, versus Sean Miller, 18-6, with 7 KOs. So there we go, big night of action. And I believe that's going to be on Don King pay-per-view as well.
Yes, yes, it is. It's on his pay-per-view. And if you go to Don King site, I think he's having it on three different platforms, Bob. And
okay, yeah.
if they go to and Google all of that, it's right there on Google.
Right.
You know, the three different websites that the fight's on with Don King Productions. Don is one of them. So you got three different ones you can choose, and the price tag is $49.99, which is a dynamite for that many fights. It's a dynamite.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, we talk about that price point a lot, too, you know, from the $75, $80 thing. So it's nice to get that kind of action, yeah, for one night. Yeah, that's a good thing to do. Buy that one.
But if you look at it with six title fights like that, you're getting a bang for your buck, because if you look at $10 or $9.99, it looks like it's under $10 per fight. So that's a heck of a deal.
Oh yeah,
I think
so too. Yeah, so we'll definitely be talking more about it next week too. But just to keep that in everybody's mind. You know, watch out for that fight next weekend. And also, we had some other news this week in the heavyweight world. Looks like Filip Hogovic just can't find anybody to get in the ring with him. We were talking Tony Yoka, the French fighter. He was going to be the IBF eliminator, but he was supposed to fight last week on the 15th. But because of the COVID and the lockdowns, France is limiting, you know, activities and all that. So the fight was indefinitely postponed, was the word from the French Boxing Council, and he was going to fight Martin Bacoli. But now they're saying that fight is still on. They have to take care of that one first before he can fight anybody else. So now it looks like Joe Joyce is going to be the next man in line. Yeah, Ortiz is doing his job now. Parker,
I'm
going to
tell you like this. Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. It looks like we're, you know, that spot is that he's getting bad luck, you know. So we have to look at that, Bob, to see if it's what's going on with these guys. You know, there's an old saying in boxing is that you have to stay ready, meaning staying in dynamite shape, being always prepared for if a fight comes up, you can climb in the ring and make something happen. You know what I'm saying, Bob?
Yes.
And these guys got to realize that kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and you know what? Especially at this time with the pandemic out there, and we don't know from day to day if a fight's actually going to go off until it really goes off, somebody tests positive or something happens, you know, at the last minute. So, again, we've seen that a lot lately where somebody steps in at the last minute.
Yeah, and they rise to the occasion, and guys get beat like that because they get relaxed in the mind, and they don't think that it's going to happen, and bang, what happens, that the person, you know, rise to the occasion because they were ready.
Right.
And if you stay ready like that, That's the kind of things that will happen for you, you know?
Right, exactly. And, yeah, being ready and just ready to step up and do it, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's like anything. When you fail to prepare, you prepare to fail. And these guys got to realize with all these different fights now coming, you know, a lot of stuff is happening in boxing. As people are coming out of the pandemic, a lot of shows are being put on and people are fired up trying to make something happen before it looks like, you know, we might have another shutdown in this thing. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. And that's, again, part of the whole thing. We don't know who's fighting when. I said we find all the time. This guy had to drop out. That guy dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it happens a lot. And if they stay engaged in what they're doing, you know, an opportunity may come their way where they can rise to the gaze and then fight and win and become a champion. When people say, oh, man, I ain't ever think this a couple months ago, you know. And then.
Yeah, I know. It's even like, some of these fights that we've been talking about coming up with, over in England and being shut down. And it's just something that we just have to deal with almost like hour by hour, when we're doing the show. We're looking around in the morning. Okay, is that fight still on? Yeah, okay. Good to know. But, hey, I want to take a little trip down memory lane one more time. I'm going to surprise you with something. You'll know this is coming. But, 1987, I was working at a radio station down in South Jersey. And we were having fun doing, people remember, but way back then there was DJs would put together these little things where it would be like a fake interview and a song would answer the question, So with that in mind, let me take you back to 1987 at a station, something we put together here.
All right.
Marvelous Marvin Hagler and Sugar Ray Leonard square off in their long-anticipated battle. When asked for his pre-fight analysis, Sugar Ray told WBNJ in order for Hagler to beat him, and Marvelous Marvin Hagler, well, he has this to say about that. And that's a quick look at sports on Bob Murray.
I just happened to come across that I was doing some dubbing down some old cassettes from radio days and just putting them onto the computer, and this one popped up, and I said, of all the things, I said, this is the Hagler Leonard fight, man. This is.
Did it work, Bob, or what?
Yeah, it worked, yeah. I actually did see that fight on a pay-per-view, too, closed circuit back then, it was called. We went to a theater, and, I think it was Wildwood Convention Hall, actually, I saw that fight. So that was, part of that whole memory too. Putting that together. I kind of had forgotten about that little bit, but we were doing a lot of stuff like that, so it was neat to find that and pass that along. 35 years ago, brother. long time.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, it is. Boy, time's moving by so fast. I mean, yes, next week, this month of January, and to be gone. Yeah, and it seems like, hey, we just started yesterday.
Happy New Year to you. Hey, we had some news from the Money Man this week, too. He announced out he's getting involved in Daytona. He's going to have a car racing at the Daytona 500 next month, a big event that kicks off the NASCAR season. His car is going to be the Money Team. Going to be number 50 in honor of his 50 wins, and he's following the footsteps of guys like Michael Jordan and whatnot, who want to try their hand, put some money into the racing thing. So we'll see what happens where he goes with that. But just something else, Money Man dipping his fingers into more projects.
Yeah, well, he's following in the footsteps of an all-time great fighter named Jack Johnson.
Oh, yeah. The
first African-American heavyweight champion.
Yep.
Now, if you remember, Bob, on our different things we did on Jack Johnson, is that when Jack Johnson fought Jeffries and when he was getting out of the ring, Barney Oldfield, who was a top racing guy during that time, challenged Jack Johnson and said, "You can't beat me. I'll race you." And Jack Johnson said, bada bing, bada boom, let's do it. I'll beat you. And up in New York, at the racetrack in New York, they did race. And that wasn't the only time. Jack Johnson had a couple races, car races, but he was something special, Jack Johnson. And the film that I got have that we do with the Jack Johnson exhibit, and when we talk about this, you know, it wasn't like Bernie Oldfield just blew him out of the box. He only won by just the tip nose of the car.
Wow. Okay.
That's how close the race was. And so they, you know, because Jack Johnson was, Muhammad Ali was much like Jack Johnson. He was very brass and boasting about all kinds of things that he did. And, you know, Jack Johnson was driving fancy cars when most people were riding horse and buggy.
Right.
At that time.
Yeah.
And they asked Jack Johnson, well, why did you lose? He said, well, curves. He said, I would never take a curve like that, going around a curve at that kind of speed, you know, your accident. And he said, and that's why I lost. But he said Bernie Oldfield was taking the corners real fast. So it was something, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. It was something special, but it was a curve in North Carolina that met Jack Johnson's demise.
Right.
Where his car hit a telephone pole. And only reason we say the car hit a telephone pole, you know, they want to say Jack Johnson was driving. From what we have in the pictures we got of the wrecked car and all of that, is that it was pinned up against the side of the car. And the back door passenger side was open. And the testimonies and stuff, the guy who was with Jack Johnson was a hired driver. So what we think is that from all the research that we've done and stuff, and that the driver was driving and he lost control of the car. And we believe Jack Johnson was in the car. He got knocked out and out of the car, and the guy ran over him. Because in his statement, he said, well, Jack Johnson pulled forward and backed up. But, you know, Jack Johnson, you know, couldn't have got out of the car if he was driving, because the driver's side was pinned up against the car.
Right.
And you know, that's what all the stuff that we're doing to get it right. The head chief of police at the time was really the first one to show up. And when he showed up, Jack Johnson's companion pointed to the ground. So there's a whole bunch of mysterious stuff that goes on, and the stuff that we're working on is going to bring all of that detail out, and with facts that we have of police reports and all of that kind of stuff, in newspaper articles that we have prominent at the time that we took, that we have, you know. So, yeah, Bob. So race car driving.
Yeah.
And don't forget, the AAA, Bob, as we know it today, was the ones who overseen race car driving at that time.
Okay.
And they told Bernie Oldfield, if he raced Jack Johnson, that they were going to discredit him and take his status and all that away from him. Yeah, man.
Yeah, wow.
So so all of that that tension was in the air when that race happened. But it did happen, and he did beat Jack Johnson, but it wasn't like a large margin. It was just the tip nose of the car.
Yeah, right. Well, photo finish kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, so all of them, like Mayweather, you mentioned, Jordan, big-time athletes, big-time money, but Jack Johnson, baby.
Actually drove the car, right.
Yeah.
Money Man's not driving the car. He's just putting the money out.
Yeah, Money Man's, but Jack Johnson, you know, he drove the car. So in terms of that, you know,
Yeah.
Back then, he was first African-American race car driver, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
They don't want to look at it that way, but it was true.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's true, Bob.
Wow, there we go. But, yeah, so that's just that's the money man doing this. Plus, he's got this exhibition fight he's talking about going back into Dubai, I guess it is, to put on another exhibition later on in the year, too. So he's out there just keeping his name out there, what money man does.
Yeah, well, they got to be giving him a large chunk of change, you know, else he wouldn't be over there. You know, but they're talking about they have some type of high, like, helicopter pad on that they got. It's real high. The altitude's very high up there.
On
and
top
that's
of that
where
big,
they want to
building there. Right. Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah, they'll be building that up. But, hey, look, Bob, you know, me thinking as a trainer, if it's that high altitude that they're talking about, Mayweather better take his training up to the high altitude training like Muhammad Ali did with his training camp.
Yeah,
because if you're at sea level in train and you got to fight up in that high level altitude, he's a little older. He ain't a young man. You're gonna get winded.
Yeah.
So the wise thing that I think the money man better do, he better either train up there in that pad or train up mountainside where that altitude is at the same and don't train at sea level and then go fight up there that mountain. I've seen it happen. Guys get tired. Guys get winded.
Oh, right, yeah, we've been in the altitude. I mean, we're not even, myself, not even, you know, training or anything, but just knowing that you can feel you're fighting, taking deeper breaths and all that, that happens when you're sitting at high, like in Denver or somewhere like that, you know, when you feel that mile high really starts working on you, you're like, whoa.
hey, that's why they call it a mile high, Bob. that altitude to get to you, brother.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You'll get lightheaded and all that kind of stuff, man.
All right. And hey, also, you know, just another note we want to pass along, too, while we're talking about Ohio earlier, but it was also announced this week that USA Boxing is going to be in Cleveland. Cleveland's hosting the 22 national qualifiers, too. So another feather and a half for Ohio Boxing, too.
Yeah, you know, Ohio's trying to get back on the map where it comes from boxing. You know, the greatest promoter in the world is from Cleveland, Ohio, and that's why he's doing his thing, Don King, in Warren, Ohio. But, yeah, there are a lot of great people. And a little bit about the Warren place, Packard Music Hall.
Right.
If you can recall, we played and had Boom Boom on Mancini on our show.
Right.
And he's going to be doing the blow-by-blow or announcing for the fight on Don King's network.
Oh, okay,
but
great.
Boom,
yeah.
Boom really put Packard Music Hall on the map where he bring CBS, NBC, and those when he was fighting. And Boom Boom fought in there, for, I think it's like three times. Harry Arroyo, who's from Youngstown, you know. They bring them in there, man, and it's a dynamite place for boxing and concerts is because the ring sits in like a pit, much like the Blue Horizon was, how it's tiered. And, you know, if you got a seat up on the upper deck, you have a perfect seat because you're looking at eye level and you can see the action, the fights, because you're at the level of the ring and all that. So it's a good place for boxing, you know, and I'm happy that Don King, you know, call it back to greatness, and he bring it back great. He came out with six. Title fight. Ain't nobody thought that, man. He's a bing, 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 you know. And the thing about it is he kept it that anticipation in the news. He set one thing out. Who was fighting. Then he's seeing another. They said, oh, he added another title fight. Then he added another title fight. Then he added another title fight. Then he put it out another title fight. Then He said, with a heavyweight champions fighting on the card, you know, he just kept ringing and keeping it. But that's a great promoter's thing. You know, that's what makes Don King who he is, man. He knows how to promote. He knows how to get the people number one on the scene and get people on the screen and make them very, very popular. He's always had that knack for that. He's a great promoter, man.
Oh, yeah. You're right. And, you know, we move on a little bit here, talk about the some of the women's fight. We see that the Serrano and Katie Taylor fight going on for April 30th. And also we found out now Dimitri Salida, great promoter himself, who handles Clarissa Shields. They're talking about that Savannah Marshall fight coming up, too. He's saying it's the biggest fight in women's boxing. No, this fight's the biggest. But that's what promoters do. That's a promoter's job. It's the biggest fight. But we'll see what happens as far as both those fights. We're looking forward to, no doubt. But, yeah, we got the Katie Taylor. And actually, there was a little talk this week, too, because that same date is Shakur Stevenson is going to be fighting, too. So they're going to be trying to find out, you know, what time to put the main event on. You know how that works. But anyway, we're looking forward to that in April. There'll be some great fights coming up this year if everything stays, you know, relatively sane as far as pandemic is concerned. But, yeah, lots of good fights to look forward to. We see, you know, once again, the Tyson Fury, Dillon White, that's going back and forth, you know, with the purse bids and the 80-20 split and wondering if that's going to come off by March or not, too. So we'll keep an eye on that as well.
Yeah, well, they asked for another extension so they can both camps can talk to figure something out to make the fight happen. They're saying that they're close, but I think it's just a stall tactic. You know, when people want to do business, they're going to sit down and really hammer out the details so everybody can go get ready in the go fight. And that's what's happening in boxing. That's why you're not seeing the big fight is because they won't set aside and to hammer the thing out. They can argue or say what they want about Don King. When it comes to big time fights and things, Don King could make the big one always happen. He works day and night, and he don't let it get away from him, you know. And those huge big fights all them years in the heavyweight division, you know, he knew how to deal with all of those egos, and he was probably had the biggest one in the room. That's why he could get it done. But he knew how to calm each side to get down where the real thing at. And what it really was is that Don King would throw money. You know, he would put the money down on the wood where the betting was good. And, you know, like Muhammad Ali said, you can say whatever you want about Don when it comes to that money. He puts it on the table. And he said, and them other guys don't do that, is that they draw like a line in the sand. You don't do this or do that. That's it.
Right.
And if you don't have this much money or that much money put up, you know, it ain't going to happen. But in boxing and these big fights, there's a large margin between the cup and the lip. It's hard work. Those who work hard, you know, seem to get the money. But we look back. Canelo Alvarez, talking about him, these pay-per-views, he said he wanted to stay busy, and he didn't lie. He's staying busy. What was it, four times he fought last year during the pandemic? Amazing. And for him to be able, that caliber of fighter, to fight that many times during that pandemic, because you go up against so much in the promotion during this pandemic, and it's just rough to deal with, you know.
Right. So, and again, you don't know again till the last minute if it's really coming off, or you know what's going on. The last minute replacements and all that, like we've talked about too. So, the fact that he keeps his name out there and has been able to continue fighting as well too. So he didn't really have any of those problems that other fighters have as far as you know, a different opponent popping in the ring at the last minute.
Yeah, and Bob, just think, you know, you're fighting in the state, the governor could say, hey, look, we're shutting this thing down.
Right, yeah.
You say, wait a minute, we got a promotion. He said, you know, the only thing's going to be open restaurants like they did before during the pandemic. You know, you're getting ready for something, the next thing you know, oh, it's shut down. You can't do it. Spent all this money. What do you mean it can't happen? You know, but I think maybe they have learned something through the trial and error of economics, is that you can't just shut everything down. Because economic-wise, it hurts, and it's too hard to fire up that old furnace, as we used to say. Once you shut it down, you know, that coal, man, once you shut it down, it's hard to get that coal cooking like that again.
Yeah.
You can't cook with coal grease, as Boudini Brown used to say, Bob. You can't cook with coal grease.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear that one. I like that. All right. Well, wow.
Oh, yeah. You can't cook with cold grease. That was Boudini Brown, one of his favorite sayings.
Okay.
You know, yeah, that was one of his favorite sayings. So, yeah, Bob, so.
Yeah, you know, last couple minutes, let's just a little bit about tonight's fight. You know, we got Gary Russell again. You know, here's a guy who hasn't been fighting a lot, like pretty much once a year, but, you know, he's kind of a, you know, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, he's the longest reigning champion in boxing, you know. He's been
Yeah, date-wise, because he don't have that many fights, because he's only fighting like once a year, but, you know, somewhere along the line, it catches up with you as well as he can fight. He can outright fight. It's just that, because he can fight so well, those guys don't want to fight him. But, you know, he's getting older now, and sometimes, you know, you wait around too long, your skills diminish if you ain't in the gym practicing your trade on a constant basis, staying ready. You know, your skills will erode from you. And tonight we'll see if he's still sharp and can fight like he's capable of fighting, or will we see that Father Time has caught up with him of his inactivity to defend that championship and have a new champion? I hope not, because I like Russell Jr., but, you know, he get past the night. He got to climb back in there sooner than later. You know?
Yeah, with another undefeated fighter. You know, we talk always about what an undefeated fighter really will look like. Well, here's a good chance for Mike Sayo. He's out of the Philippines, and, you know, he's undefeated, 23-0, 16 knockouts. This isn't a walk in the park for Gary Russell Jr. either, as you're saying. You know? So we have showtime tonight, 9 o'clock.
Yeah, well, style-wise, styles make fights. You know, one thing you know about the Philippine fighters, they're macho. They're going to come to you, and they're going to come at you, and they're going to try to take your head off. But, you know, tune in to Showtime tonight, fans, and let's see what happens. I hope that Russell can get past this guy and move on to something bigger and better, man, and try to get something scheduled to get out of night. See if you can get scheduled right away, man. He deserves them big fights and them big paydays, because he can fight.
Right, yeah, so it'll be a big test, right? And also on that card, too, we have that Subriel Matias. He's 17-1, 17 KOs, but he's facing the guy who beat him in Ananian. So that's another big fight on that Showtime card, too. So, you know, check that out tonight, folks. It's going to be fun. Good night of boxing to warm me up on a cold this evening. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in closing, Bob, I think we've got 30 seconds. We want people to next Saturday at Packard Music Hall to tune in on the screen, Cook Music Hall in Warren, Ohio, man, to watch a dynamite card, record setting in the state of Ohio. Don King, 90 years old, putting on 6 title fights, and it's going to be an amazing thing, Bob. With 10 seconds, we like to say this. Thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review radio show. My name is Aaron Snow, the Hall of Fame trainer of champions, and our radio aficionado, Bob Murray, and our boxing historian, Henry Hascop. Tune in every Saturday from 11 to 12. Thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye. Thank you, everybody.